Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, we finally get to talk about games that actually happen, not just upcoming. How are you doing week one?
I'm doing great. This was, what did we have, like 5 straight days of college football? So we've got plenty to talk about today.
We absolutely do. But Dustin, at the top of the agenda, though, at least for me, has to be this. The Southeast Conference has once again established its dominion over the... Dustin, I thought they were supposed to dominate everything. What happened?
Yeah, they didn't get on the bus. The Alabama Crimson Tide didn't apparently make the trip down to Tallahassee. And then Texas laid an egg against Ohio State. I will give LSU some credit. They were able to get a win in Death Valley at Clemson, the other Death Valley at Clemson. So, but yeah, I think that the SEC is head and shoulders above the Big Ten narrative is essentially dead. Well, it's probably not dead yet, but in my eyes, it's dead.
And that's the problem. These were competitive games. Well, Texas, Ohio State was. We'll get to Alabama, Florida State. But we get, you know, the worldwide leader telling us just how good the Southeast Conference is, that Texas was going to roll into Columbus. Arch Manning would just cruise on into the Heisman Trophy and show us this. And, you know, game one, show us the best of the Southeast Conference was going to be able to put a whooping on the best of the Big Ten. And yes, as a Penn Stater, I know what I'm saying. But Ohio State, defending national champions. And, you know, Arch Manning, and I think you and I have talked about it, he may end up being a great quarterback. He may end up being the number one pick. But you got to remember, this is his first start in a hostile environment where he's the number one guy. To expect him to just step on the field and be great, that's asking a little bit too much, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought so. And at the end, I felt a little sympathy, empathy, whatever word you want to use for him, because he was built up to be the next big thing. And he got a lot of heat on social media, and that's going to be part of it, right? If you play a major college sport, you're going to get heat on. But like it's not like he's a Johnny Manziel type where he's out showboating and like basically everybody else built him up to be this next big thing. And he didn't ask to have that Manning last name. So the fact that he's, you know, the nephew of Eli and Peyton, the son of Cooper, the grandson of Archie Manning, all of that was essentially then, well, he's going to be great. And we just didn't know. I think you and I talked about, like, it was a lot of unknowns. The expectation that he was going to waltz in his first start, which is against Ohio State. And on the road, it was just too tough of an environment. Now, had they played like Akron and Southern Illinois in the first two games of the season, maybe he looks a little bit better because he gets comfortable. But I'm not going to give up on him. It's just I think that you see that making the transition to being a college football full-time starter and playing in those environments can be a big-time situation.
It is, and I'm glad you brought it up, that this is not on him, these expectations. This is everyone surrounding him, everyone who, you know, sees the Manning name and reacts to that, everyone who, you know, I joked about the SEC and ESPN promoting them, and it's all of that surrounding Arch Manning that it's a bit unfair to him, but the reality is all those people, you know, Paul Feinbaum, and I hate to bring him up every week, but he's the worst culprit. He comes in and doesn't say, hey, I think Texas is the better team, and even though they're on the road, I think they'll come through. It's they're going to blow them out. Ohio State isn't good enough. On and on and on. That's what creates this environment where you and I come on the air supporting the Big Ten.
Right. Yeah, you're exactly right, because that's all we heard all week was Ohio State didn't have a chance and Alabama was going to blow out Florida State, and neither of those things happened. So, yeah, it's one of those things where it's become a Big Ten versus SEC type thing every week, where now not only are we checking, you know, the teams we cover, the teams we're fans of, we're also checking the conference, and then we're seeing, oh, yeah, by the way, how did the SEC do this week?
Exactly. Well, let's talk about the game itself, because these are two of the very best teams in the country. I don't think there's much debate about that between Ohio State and Texas. And you know, it's a 14-7 game, low scoring. The offenses didn't really show up. And explain to me, Dustin, what's going on here. Was this just a case of the quarterbacks were young the first time they're dealing with this? Was there conservative play calling? Was the defense just really that good, Dustin? What happened? Why do we get a 14-7 game when you've got so many explosive players on both offenses?
I think both defenses had a lot to do with it. I think that's first and foremost. And then I almost feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, I do feel like there was conservative play calling, but I feel like you got to a stage in the game, and I don't know if it was in the second half, but it felt like there was a stage in the game where both coaches kind of realized, all right, mistakes are going to – like our defense is good enough. We can't give up a big mistake. You know, we'll try to nickel and dime these teams down the field. So I just felt like at some point in the game, they valued possession of the football and not trying to give the other team good field position, if that makes any sense at all. It was a very conservative – I thought it was – I don't want to say super conservative, but you're also trying to get – like Julian Sang is playing – making his first start as well. So – you don't want to risk a big time play and give the other team confidence. And I think, you know, again, if this would be a game that was on the schedule in week four, I think you might see, you know, instead of a 14-7 game, maybe it's a 24-21 type of game. But I think that both teams wanted to get their quarterbacks into a rhythm, didn't want to shatter their confidence. And just, you know, I think the mindset at some point became, if we're going to be just fine and we're going to stay in this game as long as we don't give the football away or give up, surrender that big defensive play.
So it almost becomes the self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, play conservative because you're, you know, and that's the one thing that I don't like that happens to these coaches is you play not to lose instead of playing the game to win, Dustin.
Yeah. And I this is the Ryan Day special. And usually he loses these games. We've seen it with Michigan the last 4 years when he refuses to throw the football. But I don't know that it was necessarily the wrong call in this situation. I mean, because they won. Maybe Sark could have taken a lot. Because both of these coaches are really good offensive minds. Steve Sarkisian is a really good offensive play caller. Ryan Day, when he lets it loose, is a really good offensive play caller. This would be, again, I wish this was a – I love having it week one. I love having the excitement and the meaningful games in week one. But I do wish we could have seen these kind of quarterbacks play a few of those cupcake games and then see this game in week three or week four just to see them what it would have looked like in that situation. But, I mean, Ryan Day found a way to win a game in which they played rather conservatively. I mean, but even they couldn't run the football either. They had 77 yards on 35, 36 carries, whatever the number was. And Texas was much more effective running the ball. They just had more turnovers in that game.
Well, and also this was not a case where it was always a one-score game. Once Ohio State got a 14-0 lead, mm-hmm. I'm much more forgiving of Ryan Day at that point because Texas hadn't shown they have an explosive offense and could score quickly on you. at that point, I kind of get it. I kind of get the conservatism.
Yeah, just clamp down because your defense had played well all game. So you got a 2-score lead in those type of games. Again, as long as you don't give them any momentum, you're putting yourself in a really good spot. So you've trusted your defense all game. Why risk it? Why try to go over the top? If there's a feeling to that game where you're saying Julian's playing well enough, but I don't want to risk by throwing a deep ball and him making a mistake and shattering his confidence. I think that that's acceptable in this type of situation. Now, when we get to week 8, week 9, that's probably not going to be the case, but I thought in this game it was appropriate.
Hey, you're playing quarterback at a major program. I don't want to hear this shattering confidence bit. I mean, that shouldn't be the issue, but being up 14-0, okay, I think it's the best strategy to hold on and win the game. But I also think it's a bit of a theme through college football now is these young quarterbacks coming in. And, you know, we'll talk about some of the other quarterbacks who played in this game and this first week. But that is a factor. These guys don't come in ready to go week 1 out of high school.
Right. I mean, it's a new world where it's like you're competing. It used to be you would spend at least a year as like a red shirt and a year or two on the bench. And then, you know, your sophomore, junior, senior, that's when you had the chance to shine. There were probably some exceptions along the way. But now you've got kids who are freshmen immediately competing for starting jobs. Kids aren't necessarily using their redshirt year. So it makes a huge difference. You've got to be ready. And with all of the – I think a lot of the people, too, try not to give kids a pass at quarterback anymore because there's so much competition. These 7-on-7, all these drills where they should be, you know, prepared and ready to go. And I think physically they are. But the mental aspect of playing in front of 100,000 people, especially if it's your first start – is like you just have to be in a completely different mental space. And I think they probably got to that point at some stage in the game. But, man, that's just I don't care how prepared you are. That's going to give you at least some jitters.
It is. And you made a good point. This was a wonderful matchup. And I don't want to be a hypocrite because I don't like all of these cupcake games that teams are scheduling. But this probably would have been nicer in week 3, yeah, where both these quarterbacks had gotten a couple starts under their belt, kind of got into the rhythm of things. And who knows, maybe we'll see Ohio State, Texas again on down the road. All right, Dustin, that's it for quarter 1. Lots more games to talk about when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
It's quarter 2 on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter 2. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking about week 1 in college football. A lot going on, a lot of games. We talked about Ohio State, Texas. Two teams at the top of the rankings. But, Dustin, it's becoming conferences against conference, you know. So it wasn't just Texas and Ohio State. It was Southeast Conference and Big Ten. Another game, Alabama, Florida State. Alabama was a 2-touchdown favorite. over Florida State, and they got run right off the field. And it was as bad or worse than the score indicated. That was not a good-looking Alabama team at all. And I guess my question is can we – is it time to stop – Alabama is no longer the Alabama they were under Nick Saban.
Yeah, I think that that's very fair to say, which is wild because – when they hired Kalen DeBoer, I thought, oh, that's a really – I mean, the guy kind of turned around Indiana's offense when he was the offensive coordinator there. He did a really good job in his short time at Fresno State. He obviously went undefeated and took Washington into the national championship game. But it makes me wonder – that's a guy who has primarily coached lesser-talented players. And that's not to say that they're bad players. It's to say that they're not the high four-star, five-star caliber kids that Alabama gets. And not every coach is equipped to handle those sorts of egos and mentalities. And it makes me wonder if he's in over his head in that regard. I don't think Kalen DeBoer is a bad coach. I think he's proven he's a very good coach. But Alabama's a different animal. And, Jim, I will say this. I texted my brother after that game. And he was like, they're going to run Saban or they're going to run DeBoer out of town. And I was like, I don't know what sane person would take that job after Nick Saban. Why would anybody want that job immediately after Nick Saban? There's nobody that's going to live up to that expectation. And I've already heard if they finish 8-4 or worse, that Kalen DeBoer is going to be done. Could you imagine?
Well, you know, you say 8-4. I want to say 9-3, he's in trouble. Yep. And I know that you and I talked about it, and we talked about it on other shows. I don't understand these coaches who have so much success in one program but are quick to move on to what they consider that little bit higher rung when it's not a match. Plus, you've got the expectation level. What am I talking about? Scott Frost leaving Central Florida for Nebraska. Now, that seemed like the perfect fit.
Yep.
It wasn't. Rich Rodriguez, years ago, going to Michigan. Culture shock. That wasn't going to work. And we even talked about this with Kalen DeBoer. He had already showed he could win at Washington. Washington was moving to the Big Ten, where the financial resources he would receive would be as good as anywhere in the country. And with the success there, 8-4, 9-3 at Washington is not going to get him fired. And at Alabama, following Nick, you win the next 5 national championships. Well, you know what? You just hit balance. You didn't win anything over because you would just match Nick Saban. That's it.
Right, exactly. There's really no winning in those situations. It is bizarre to me that coaches can be so quick to move on. Obviously, I know money's a big thing. Access to better recruits is always appealing to those coaches. But man, I don't think he had ever coached in the South, if I remember correctly. And that's a different animal because my guess is, and I don't know because I don't know Washington's program, but I can speak pretty confidently that the boosters in the SEC are pretty hands-on. And they are going to know everything that's going on. They're going to want to know who you're recruiting, how you're recruiting them, why you didn't get 5-star kid, you know, Joe Schmo, who's a 5-star running back. I don't know if it's more hands-off at Washington. I would assume it probably is, which makes then his job easier. He can say, you know what? This kid may not be a 5-star kid, but I like his attitude. I like what he's going to bring. He's going to be very coachable. Whereas if you go, Nick Saban had that respect among all of those players, regardless of their ego, where he can go in and they're going to be coached by Nick Saban. I don't think Kalen DeBoer has that same cachet. And again, it's really different when you're talking about 4- and 5-star players who have been told how good they are their entire life. And now you've got to try to coach those guys. It's not easy. There's a reason Nick Saban is the greatest of all time.
You know what? And with Nick Saban, there's a saying that this goes back to the first I heard this was with John Wooden, the legendary coach, basketball coach at UCLA. You don't want to be the next guy. You want to be the guy after the guy.
Yep.
Because if you're Nick Saban, if you're John Wooden, you can say and do the players, you're bigger than any player on the team, which leads me to a John Wooden story. Bill Walton, who was very much a free spirit, as everybody knows. So he's the easily the best player in college basketball. Well, he comes back the next year at UCLA sporting long hair, which at that time, it was a different world. Back then, you didn't do that, or you didn't do that with John Wooden. Bill Walton gives him an impassioned explanation why his freedom and of expression and all of that very passionately. And John Wooden responds, "Bill, that's wonderful. I get it. Tremendous explanation. I really respect you. We're going to miss you, but I still really respect you. But we're going to miss you unless you get a haircut."
Yeah.
Well, John Wooden could do that because he could win with or without Bill Walton. Nick Saban could win with or without any players. And I think the players now probably they don't look at Kalen DeBoer the same way they would at Nick Saban. And I don't know if you saw, there was a video going around on social media, one of the players' Twitter accounts or TikTok accounts showed them dancing up a storm in the locker room. I guess it was before the game, but it's just a bad look. And you just can't imagine a Nick Saban locker room pregame being that way.
Yeah. I mean, there's already plenty of rumors and internet things going. I mean, it sounds like that video is authentic. I just hadn't seen it, but there was plenty of other things that are already going around where you can already feel like, I think they're ready to get him out of that seat and try to find somebody else. It just, that's, we're at the Brian Harsin Auburn type level already. And he's coached in 13, 14 total games.
Exactly. Well, you know, it wasn't all bad for the Southeast Conference over the weekend. They got a tremendous win for LSU over Clemson, 17-10. Now, I was curious to see this game because as opposed to most of the top teams in the country, they both had veteran quarterbacks returning. And we still had this low-scoring 17-10 game, Dustin.
Yeah, still really good. That LSU defense was outstanding, especially in the second half. Like, I thought a lot of the hype around LSU surrounded around Garrett Nussmeier. Their defense is way better. It's one game, so I'm hesitant to always say this kind of stuff, but they definitely have a top 10 defense in the country and maybe challenging for the best. We'll see. I don't know how good Clemson's offense is, you know, and we'll kind of see throughout the rest of the season, but I was thoroughly impressed. I did not know what to expect with LSU's defense, but it was at least on Saturday night, it was as good as advertised.
And you know what? You have to credit Ohio State for their win with Texas, but that was in Columbus, okay?
Right.
And I don't want to trivialize it. That's still a great, great win for Ohio State. But I think I look at it with LSU winning at Clemson may be the best win of the weekend.
I think so. I think a lot of people would agree with that because of how it looked, because they – again, they were able to do it defensively. I think Brian Kelly kind of getting over the hump and winning that first game of the season. And a lot of people, I think the big thing about that, Jim, is a lot of people walked away from that game and thought Clemson's probably the best team in the ACC and they're probably going to be in the college football playoff. So the fact that LSU in game one was able to go to Clemson and win that game, I think gives them even more credit heading into the rest of the season.
You know what? Going into this game, I felt like the ACC's reputation, Clemson was carrying the flag, not just for Clemson, but for the entire ACC. And by losing to LSU, who who knows? They may end up being the best team in the Southeast Conference. We don't know yet. It'd be interesting, especially if that ends up being the case, that kind of softens this for Clemson a bit. But what you also have to look at, though, is another game, Notre Dame at ACC Miami.
Yeah.
And Miami winning that game. Had Clemson won against LSU, you know, the ACC would have been bragging like crazy. What this shows you is you got to judge these teams individually, not just by conference. But with that said, that's a huge win for the ACC.
Yeah, I mean, that I did not expect that. I thought that that was going to be a – I don't know. I always feel like Miami is one of those teams that gets really highly ranked early in the season and maybe doesn't live up to the expectation. But they dominated that game. I think the final score ended up being 24-21. I thought it was even – I don't even think it was that close, but – Miami kind of did the Mario Cristobal thing that they do where they try to give the game away near the end. But I thought that if you look at the trenches, like Miami was better than Notre Dame for 50 straight minutes. And then they kind of, you know, did some things that allowed Notre Dame to get back in it and make it a game at the end. But that was an impressive win because I still think that's a pretty solid Notre Dame team.
It is. And it's going to be a fascinating look at Notre Dame through the rest of the season after this loss. Had they won this game, my goodness, I think you could have punched their playoff ticket already.
Yeah.
Okay, had they won this game, looking at their schedule, they don't have those huge matchups that the Big Ten teams do, that the Southeast Conference teams do. So that's going to make – but I have to look. This is bad. I'm unprepared. Do you know if Miami plays Clemson in the regular season? That all of a sudden becomes a monster game, does it not? I'll tell you what, let's look it up between segments, and we'll start out with that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three of our show. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking college football. Let's start with this, Dustin. I ended last segment with, boy, wouldn't a Clemson-Miami game be great? Not going to happen, at least not in the regular season, Dustin.
Yeah, we could see it in the championship game, but we will not get Miami-Clemson, unfortunately. We will get Clemson-North Carolina in a few weeks, which could be a disaster, and I'm looking forward to that. Clemson-SMU, Clemson-Florida State, and Clemson-Louisville, who I think some people have talked about Louisville as being a potential contender in that conference too. So they still got some pretty good games, but yeah, after week one, I think people would love to see Clemson Miami, but maybe we'll get it in the ACC championship game.
Well, we do have Clemson versus Florida State.
Yep.
And we do have Clemson versus SMU. So they're all of a sudden this ACC looks a little bit more interesting, does it?
I
was ready to crown Clemson, you know, the conference champions. And again, they played a very good LSU team. They're probably still the class of the conference, but Florida State, Miami look pretty good. So it could be an interesting conference. You mentioned, before we get to the Big Ten, which I want to, Dustin, you mentioned Bill Belichick and his North Carolina team. Oh, my goodness. It was a great atmosphere at North Carolina. They had the national audience. They had all the big names there watching, you know, the game. They had celebrity. They had national audience, like I said. They had everything going for them. That first drive, they marched right down the field. Skip Bayless said they're going to be awesome. They're going to blow out TCU. And if you can't believe Skip Bayless, who can you, Dustin?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What a turnaround.
That was a turn. And, I mean, they had Roy Williams was in the building, Michael Jordan, Randy Moss, Bill Belichick's 24-year-old girlfriend. All of them were there. All the celebrities were out, Jim. But, yeah, that first drive, I think people were like, oh, maybe this is going to work out. But then you realized that there's more to college football than just one drive. And TCU, after that, just took over and dominated. North Carolina looked awful. TCU, with that Josh Hoover, let me tell you, that kid is really good. He's a really good passer. So I think in addition to North Carolina being hilariously bad, I think also TCU, I mean, I know the Big 12 isn't the Big Ten or the SEC, but maybe TCU can make a run here. They've got a tougher schedule. They showed last night too. Like they'll have to play Arizona State. They got Kansas State. They got another ranked team on their schedule. I can't remember who it is. It's kind of a tricky schedule though. But I'm looking forward to that.
And you know the thing with them, you stole my thunder a little bit with that.
Girlfriend comment?
Yeah, it's a girlfriend comment. You knew I was going to go there eventually. But if you're TCU with the – so you got to be flustered there. With the veteran quarterback and the importance of that, you know, the guy who just – North Carolina marches right down the field. You're in enemy territory, a great Carolina crowd. First possession didn't go well for TCU. But there was no getting flustered by them. They were ready to play the rest of the way. The veteran quarterback really did the job. That's a big deal in college football, Dustin.
Yeah, it is. And I think they talked about this on the broadcast last night, too. He is a really good quarterback. And obviously at TCU, I don't know. They obviously are not going to have – I think they have a pretty solid budget, but they're probably not also going to have the same budget as in Alabama, Clemson, Penn State, Ohio State, that kind of stuff. And they talked about how in the offseason he had an opportunity to go probably a lot of different schools, make more money, be a starter, compete on a championship-level team. And he said no. He's like, I told my guys I was coming back. What, you know, I value loyalty. And I just – regardless of how TCU's season turns out and how Josh Hoover plays, the fact that you have some kids like that that are still – and I know Drew Aller's another example at Penn State, but the fact that you do have kids who still value loyalty, it's just such a rarity in college football and any college sports anymore. And so I thought that – I really respected that, and I think that's kind of what you need to be a championship-level team. You need to have that kind of leadership, but that also speaks to how Sonny Dykes has built his team, where they have team chemistry. And I like, even as you mentioned, they go down 7-0, all of a sudden your eyes can get really wide, you can start to overthink things, you cannot trust your teammates. But it was like, okay, we had one – our defense gave up one bad drive, and we're just going to go out and dominate the rest of this football game, and that's exactly what they did.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Drew Aller and Penn State. And as I've gotten closer to this Penn State program, it's easier to see what's going on with the culture. And I know that that's an overused word, Dustin, but if you create the culture of this is a place players want to be, when they get here, they stay. Okay. Yep. And James Franklin has lost very few players to the portal, you know, just going to a highest bidder. And I think it's because of the culture. And it's one of those chicken and egg things. Is it that culture that creates it, or is it the players that he brings in that make that culture. So I saw that, you know, the other night with the talk about the TCU quarterback Hoover, where they created an environment where he wants to stay there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm sure he's compensated well, but he could be compensated even better elsewhere. But he's not looking just to go to the highest bidder. And yes, you can get a lot of good players that way with the money.
Yeah.
But, and our colleague Andy Shea here says, it's not always about getting the best player. Oftentimes it's about getting the right player.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that that's now James Franklin is unique to me. Well, I don't know about unique, but I think at that level, it's unique to find players who I have a lot of respect for James Franklin. I think people probably who have listened to this show know that. And I think anybody who talks about him ever being on the hot seat is out of their mind. But he's in a unique spot where he continually brings in top 10 classes and those kids stay, and he still has a really strong culture, because it would be easy for him to recruit, try to get the best players and say, I don't care if this kid fits our culture or not. He's super talented. We need players like him. But I get the sense that he's not like, you have to have the right mindset. You have to have the right attitude to play for James Franklin. And if you don't have that mindset, we would love to have you, but we're not going to, you're not going to come in here and crash the culture we have. And there've been some players in the past who have been dismissed or have left. And I feel like sometimes those are, that's addition by subtraction.
And again, with the Penn State program, and I will correct you on one thing, Dustin, you mentioned about him getting top 10 classes. He typically does not. In the last maybe 8 years, he's had one top 10 recruiting class. Mm. Now, it was a really good one. This was the 22 class, where it was Drew Aller and Nick Singleton. And there's no doubt that, you know, that recruiting class, they're still reaping the rewards of that recruiting class. But more typically, they're ranked 14th, 15th in the country. And it's one of the examples I always bring up. Ohio State is always a top five recruiting class, right, if not even higher. But the guys they bring in, and I think they scout very well, they bring in guys, you know, Tyler Warren was a three-star recruit. Abdul Carter, I don't believe he was a top 100 recruit in the country, if you could believe that. Okay. I think he was the 33rd ranked linebacker in the country when he was recruited. Okay. So there's more going on to recruiting than that. Now I'm going a little off the tangent here, but I think that's going to be the thing that's going to be a differentiator for teams. Is that maybe the difference, you know, with Nick Saban run Alabama versus a Kalen DeBoer run Alabama? Who that coach is really matters, Dustin.
It does. And you have to establish that culture. And obviously there are a lot of coaches across the country who have done that. I think we saw it last night with TCU. And look, it doesn't mean just a few years ago, TCU was in the national championship game, followed by, I think they went 5-7. I don't remember. And then they won 9 games last year. So like it doesn't mean you can't have a bad season, but when you have that culture established, it means that you're probably going to get things back on the right track sooner rather than later. And I think TCU has been an excellent example of that these past 4 or 5 years.
It also leads to, you know, Sonny Dykes, with the success he's had at TCU, as you mentioned, he had made it to a championship game. If I have some advice for him, when the big guys, when Alabama or LSU or, you know, one of those huge names comes knocking at your door, ignore them.
Yeah, tell them no.
Tell them no. You could win where you're at. You've already proven that. And it doesn't always then translate. Wow, if he could get the talent that a Southeast Conference in Alabama or an LSU or someone like that could get, doesn't always work out, which is why it's going to be fascinating, Dustin, in the Big 12, where there is a lot of parity. Texas Tech went out and spent a lot of money in this offseason. I have no doubt that will help them, but is it going to be the difference maker?
We'll find out, right? I think a few years, I always think back to a few years ago when Texas A&M brought in that, you know, the best class we've ever seen, top all these five-star talents, and nobody's going to be able to touch them. And they went out and I don't know, we're 600, they were 500, 6-6, I think. I don't remember exactly what the record was, but they were around 500. So just because you money can buy the talent or buy the recruits, you still have to have a really good coach. You still have to have a really strong culture, because if not, everybody's going to do their own thing. And if you got, you know, 100 guys pulling 100 different ways, it can go awry pretty quick, regardless of how good the talent is. We've seen that, like Alabama probably has one of the top five rosters in college football, and we saw what happened on Saturday.
And Penn State they'll use this as part of their recruiting. A very good young player named King Mack started at Penn State, went to Alabama for 1 year, Dustin. Guess what? He's back in a Nittany Lion uniform this year. Yeah. So maybe that grass isn't always greener. All right. As promised, we will get to the Big Ten schedule. We're going to do that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We're talking college football. We're kind of looking at the national landscape, Dustin. Let's get to your specialty. Let's talk a little bit Big Ten football. We obviously hit the big game with Ohio State beating Texas. There was no other game like that on the Big Ten schedule. But what were the games we're looking forward to going into this weekend, and then your reaction to results? Anything that sticks out for you?
Yeah, we talked about the Nebraska-Cincinnati game heading into that, just to kind of see year two of Dylan Raiola and kind of his development. They win that game. They won a one-score game, which that has been their Achilles heel the past couple seasons. I will say I was not thoroughly impressed with Dylan Raiola. Now, again, it could be the first game you're playing a Power Four opponent. Even though it was mostly a home game being in Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium, it's still neutral field. So they'll have a couple weeks against some, I think, Akron and another cupcake on the schedule to kind of get things rolling here before they play Michigan. I think we were all interested to see Michigan and Bryce Underwood. And that kid is pretty good, pretty tough. I was not thoroughly impressed with Michigan's performance in that game. I thought New Mexico threw some stuff at him. I honestly thought New Mexico matched their physicality. And maybe somebody's going to knock me for that. But I thought, you know, New Mexico, they never really had a chance to win the game. But it just felt like, you know, they're not backing up. They're not caving to this Michigan team. So I was impressed with that. How about Nico Iamalava, I think I pronounced it correctly that time. Utah 43-10 over UCLA. Jim, I know I've said this a lot. I was really impressed with the job Deshaun Foster did last season. I know Utah's typically pretty good. this could be another disaster type. Like, UCLA looked awful. That was a game I turned off at halftime because I'm like, there's no point to this. this is bad. That was so those were some of the other games that I pointed out. I could go on and on all day. I'll just mention some things. Wisconsin beating Miami of Ohio 17-0. We were already concerned because of Wisconsin's schedule. Even if they were a good team, they could have been 5-7. Beating Miami of Ohio 17-0 isn't exactly the nod of confidence for Luke Fickell. Indiana 27-14 kind of looked like they have taken a step back. And then that might be it. I thought I had one more earmarked here, but that I think that's it. I think that's all I've got.
Well, I find it interesting, the quarterback story everywhere. You mentioned Raiola. His numbers certainly look good.
Yes, yeah, they did.
33 of 42, 243 yards, two touchdowns. I don't think any interceptions. One game you didn't mention was Illinois. Again, this a blowout win, what you expect, you know. I think it was Western Illinois, like 52-3. But Altmyer, 17 of 21, 217 yards, three TDs. Again, that veteran quarterback thing. Yep. It seems like Illinois has their act together, how they're going to play. I was just really curious to see the numbers. Now, like Iowa put up 34 points against Albany. Okay, who cares? who cares? But did you see the numbers from Mark Gronowski, who came from the FCS school, bumped up? Is he going to be the quarterback savior? Did you see his numbers?
They were atrocious. And, Jim, I saw – this is it's hilarious to me because we talked about this all offseason. Like, we hear this every stinking year about Iowa's quarterbacks. Like, oh, this is finally going to be the guy. And I'm like, I'll believe it when I see it because you guys have tried to pull the wool over my eyes too many times. And there is a legitimate concern. I think this was posted by someone who covers or is a fan of Iowa, where he had back-to-back two of the worst passes, Jim, that I've ever seen. There was one receiver that was wide open, 15 yards down the field. No pressure. He underthrew him by 5 yards. Another one, he was running trying to throw a check down to the running back, sailed it over his head. Nobody around anybody. And again, it's not that I think if you make that mistake, those mistakes are going to happen in a game where you're just like, oh, gosh, wish I had that one back. But it wasn't like he had those mistakes and was 17 of 23. He was 8 of 15 against Albany. Woof.
44 yards total. and you know, sometimes I look at the numbers, Dustin, not just for, okay, those were bad numbers. But I think what might be most telling is they only let him throw the ball 15 times.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, and you can
go ahead.
No, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but and people can say that they ran all over Albany over 300 yards, which they did. But Albany's defense gave up like 185 yards per game on the ground last season in the FCS. So of course you should be able to run all over them.
Yeah, I think you want to establish something that, hey, we've got a guy who can confidently throw the ball to these receivers. And again, I'll do a little comparison with Penn State. They tried to establish their new receivers, their transfer wide receivers. One caught 7 passes, the other caught 8, and there was only like the targets versus number of completions. I think Trevor Peña, it was – targeted 8 times with 7 completions. You know, that kind of numbers, both him and Kyron Hudson both had those kind of numbers. And I was actually, this is where I respected James Franklin for talking about this. In a blowout game, at the very end, I'm watching the end of the game, all the backups are in, and starting tight end Khalil Dinkins caught a pass late, very late in the game. And my instant reaction is, what in the world is he doing in the game? Well, he hadn't caught a pass prior.
Yeah.
And James Franklin, in his post-game press conference, he brought it up. He wasn't asked about it. He said, that's why Khalil Dinkins was in the game late. We wanted to make sure everybody got a target. So you saw, and instantly after the completion, he left the game. He was done for the rest of the game. And making a long story of it, my point being, you've got this new quarterback who's supposed to change your offense. Let him throw the stinking ball. Let's find out. Let's let everybody know. Let's let this kid get some confidence. 8 for 15, 44 yards. That's not confidence.
No.
Speaking of lack of confidence, the one other league game I just want to at least mention, Tulane 23, Northwestern 3. God. Northwestern quarterback Preston Stone, the transfer from SMU, 4 interceptions, Dustin.
Yeah. I don't think Northwestern's going to be very good this year. They are probably the worst team in the Big Ten.
Well, which is a great segue to your Purdue Boilermakers.
Being the worst team in the Big Ten.
Not being the worst team. Did you get anything out of their first game?
I thought that they played hard and connected for a full 60 minutes. And I know that that's really kind of a small trophy, but at the same time, this is a team that didn't do that at all last season. So I think that was a good step in the right direction. I thought that their passing game looked a lot better than it was all last season too. So, but Ball State, and then they'll play Southern Illinois this week. And then we'll really find some stuff out about the Boilermakers in week 3 when they play USC.
Oh yes, we will. All right. Let's just do a real quick look ahead. Not a lot of great games on the slate nationally, nor in the Big Ten, but a game I'm really curious about. Illinois is at Duke.
Yeah, that's a first big test for Illinois. We know they've got Indiana coming up in a few weeks, so this is a good chance for Illinois to kind of get some confidence against a Power 4 opponent, get a win on the road. But Duke in these situations against Big Ten teams, now, yeah, I think primarily it's been against Northwestern. Maybe they'll throw in another team. But Duke has played spoiler in some of these games. And I know you're a big Manny Diaz guy. So that's going to be a really interesting game. Kind of one that's going to, I think, fly under the radar a little bit.
It might. Well, I'm not sure if it will, just simply because, and I was looking, I think it's actually the noon ESPN game. I'd have to double check to confirm
yes,
that.
Yes, it is.
But it's a 2.5-point spread game, and you are right. You are right. I am a Manny Diaz fanboy. I am, okay? And I always wonder about these teams like Illinois. Everyone, including us, have been calling Illinois this year's Indiana, okay?
Right.
Their schedule plays out. What usually happens to that kind of team, they get shot down somewhere.
Yep.
Boy, is this an opportunity for them to get shot down.
It really is. Yeah, they're going to have their helmets screwed on and ready to go, because if anything, we know that Manny Diaz's teams play really tough. And he went to, Northwestern's wasn't a good team last year, but they went into Northwestern and got a win last year. So I think this is going to be a really good football game. Illinois can really prove something if they go in and get a win. I think that's not going to be an insignificant victory for them.
I agree. And the one other game in the league that I want to ask you about is Iowa playing Iowa State.
Yeah. Every sign to me points to Iowa State winning this game. I don't know it, because if I'm Iowa State, just load the box and say, great, if Mark Gronowski beats us throwing the football, then congratulations. But I don't see that happening. Like, if they can stop the run, I know Iowa's known for its defense. It's probably going to be a 17-14 type of game. But I just think that Iowa State is in a much better spot than Iowa is. Now, I know one game for Iowa, we'll see. But I just have a feeling that Iowa State's going to get that win.
Well, here's my take on it, Dustin. If you didn't watch any of the games, and I told you there was a Big Ten team where their quarterback went 8 for 15 for 44 yards. Would you be able to guess which team it was?
Yes.
That's the problem with Iowa. You could change that quarterback all you want, The end results typically end up the same. All right, Dustin, that's going to be it for our show. Appreciate you coming on with your Big Ten insight. It was great to get through week one. We got a couple more weeks to go before we really get into the conference games. That'll be a lot of fun. Enjoy the games this week. Thank you all for joining us. Join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.